Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So in 2006, Deborah Fallows spent a few semesters brushing up on her Mandarin Chinese. It was in preparation to move to Shanghai and Beijing for 3 years, while her husband James Fallows was on assignment with The Atlantic. While she never expected perfect proficiency, Deborah was surprised to discover that her studying had left her completely unprepared for the accents and idiosyncrasies of living and working in China. The cultural adjustment was a rough one at first, but when the language finally began to click, it gave rise to a new book, Dreaming in Chinese, Mandarin Lessons in Life, Love, and Language. And here to tell about her linguist eye view of life in China is Deborah Fallows. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
So for starters, why anchor your experiences, which I'm sure was so rich for you as a curious American, 3 years in China, through stories about language?
Well, language and linguistics are my background. And what I found from going and living in China was that it was such an overwhelming experience that I needed something to grab onto, something where I felt a little bit comfortable and could find a way into the experience. And for me, that was really working through the language. That was my passion.
So the first story in the book, for example, is a reflection on the differences in how Chinese and Westerners use the word love.
Right, a word that's fraught in any language and any culture. But it was really interesting. Back the first time we went to China, which was about 25 years ago with our then little children, we had two little boys then, and a Chinese woman looked at me and looked at our little boys and said, "Which one do you love more?" Which was,
oh my.
Right, it really took me aback and was something that I had remembered, you know, for 25 years. And then when we went back to China, I heard these other references to the word love that just kind of popped out at you. And that kind of experience becomes the way toward thinking, well, what the heck's going on with this word here? And what does it mean in the culture? And what does it mean in the language?
So is there another example?
There are other examples, right. We had a number of Western Chinese friends who were couples, Western and Chinese. And eventually, when you got to know them a little bit, the Western half of the couple would always say, oh, my Chinese wife, my Chinese husband, she'll never say I love you. She won't say it in Mandarin. She won't say it in English. She just can't utter these words. Then the rest of the conversation in the Chinese half will say, oh, my husband, my wife, she's always saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's so hollow. It's so gratuitous. So you've got, you know, streets going in the opposite direction here.
And you're right that speaking Chinese often makes you feel blunt. And we often consider blunt to be equated with rude. But what are you trying to say?
In Chinese, there are very few softeners in the language like we have in English. For example, if you go into a restaurant and the server says, would you like a glass of water? In English, you'd say, oh, no, thanks. I'll have something else later. I don't really want it now. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. With all these kinds of woulds and coulds and thank yous and pleases. In Chinese, it's just buyao, don't want, don't need, which is, I know, the way you say it. But when you hear that kind of language, your sense is you always kind of want to pile on with a few more niceties to complete what you're saying in a more polite way.
And I gather you haven't even learned to say please in Chinese.
Well, I have now, ting. But it was a shocking realization after 18 months to see that I didn't even know how to say the word please. I went around saying thank you a lot. And that's another thing, like the I love yous, that the Chinese will say, oh, these Westerners, you know, really, you use way too many pleases and thank yous for us.
Funny because I think internationally Americans have a reputation of being very direct, while the language and the communication style of many other cultures are more indirect,
right. And I think it's part of a factor of just how Chinese is, that it's minimalist in a lot of ways. Not only do you not have these softening things in the language, but no declensions, no conjugations, you know, no agreements, none of this forced march memorization of all the endings on lots of things. So, and actually very little use of even pronouns.
What's that about?
Well, that's about a funny thing. It's about a lot of things. One thing it's about culturally is that during the Cultural Revolution, it kind of fell out of fashion to use wo, which means I. You know, it's not about me, me, me. It's about the state. It's about the masses. It's about the party. And just kind of traditionally, being minimalist in a lot of sense, you don't have to keep repeating those pronouns all the time if you and I know what we're talking about. There's a lot of clarification going on if you're not careful about this, back and forth. What do you really mean?
Do you think that Cultural Revolution concept of self and the diminishment of self persists to this day, even though so much has changed there, including, you know, individualistic capitalism?
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. Certainly, language changes organically, and it's coming back to more of the I and me and what's in it for me. But even in one of my classes where the young teacher was asking us, you know, what do you believe in? And one by one, we had to kind of go around the table, and all the Westerners were saying, oh, you know, I believe in democracy, I believe in free speech and all these things. Then we asked the teacher, what do you believe in? And she had always been speaking in Mandarin, of course, in the class, and suddenly she very purposefully, a shy teacher, blurted out with, I believe in myself. And we were all kind of taken aback because, for one thing, she never kind of projected herself forward, and that she had to kind of switch to English and say the I believe in myself rather than saying that in Mandarin, which, you know, she could have said, we would have understood, was a real indication, I think, of how that is in shift.
Deborah Fallows is here. Her book is called Dreaming in Chinese, Mandarin Lessons in Life, Love, and Language. And by the way, she's going to be on a panel at the Asia Society tonight. That's at 6:30 about the book and living in China. You can get more information from our webpage. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr Show for that. You've lived and worked in a number of countries, right?
We have.
So how would you compare the Chinese language and cultural experience, as you've been describing it here, to somewhere else? Like, people may be wondering, how would you compare China and Chinese and Japan and Japanese?
Yeah. Well, I'd say, you know, one of the main differences, aside from the fact that it is still a developing and country with hundreds of millions of peasants, and you don't really buffer yourself from that part of the experience, that being an American in China is actually a really easy situation. You move around with a lot more anonymity than you do in certainly in Japan, where you feel like you're kind of wearing a sandwich board that says, you know, I'm American.
Right?
Right. In China, they're so busy with their own lives, one by one, and bettering their own situation that, oh, you know, you're kind of interesting as a foreigner going by, but let me be on with my own business.
Huh. Do you think that other Americans in China or other Westerners who don't have your understanding of linguistics and Mandarin through a linguist's eye and the cultural underpinnings take a harsher stance on Chinese culture and their perception of it than you do?
I think it's less about the language and linguistics than about some other things. I mean, the expats I came to know who were the most happy or had the most kind of engaged experience were ones who found a way into the language through something of their passion. Mine happened to be the language and linguistics. But in China, say, I had a friend who was a photographer. That was her key to getting into the culture and her way in. Others might be interested in textiles, martial arts, you name it, cooking. But those who found a particular avenue, certainly if you're doing real business in China, that's a harder thing because you've got to get along according to elaborate sets of rules that you might not easily absorb or be able to follow.
And you're after your interest versus their interest in the business negotiation.
Right.
We just have 30 seconds, but you were in China to conduct pure research to go along with your linguistic analysis, and you were studying something about internet use?
Right. Just what do Chinese users on the internet do in their daily internet life, which ended up to be a whole lot different from in the U.S. and probably will never be the same. There's a lot more recreation and entertainment. It's students and kids in internet bars playing games, chatting, watching movies and so forth. And
playing games, chatting, entertainment? That doesn't sound so different.
Commerce is coming. Information services are coming, but with a Chinese accent.
Deborah Fallows, author of Dreaming in Chinese, Mandarin Lessons in Life, Love, and Language. Again, she'll be at the Asia Society on a panel at 6:30 tonight. Information on our site, wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.